And a lot of guys, they were asking me for the last podcast, you know, it was talking about radio and stuff like that. And they said, Unks, what happened? Was it that bad? And I'm like, no. I didn't mean to give you guys the impression that radio was bad, my radio journey. I was talking about the pay and the struggle that you have to go through to get to where you want to be. Okay. And it happened to a lot of us. It happened to everybody that I know in radio that actually got to be, you know, whatever you want to call it, popular, whatever that, or in the good positions, that kind of thing. But first, the attitude of gratitude. So he goes, Unks, tell some radio stories, like about radio, like stuff that, you know, that we don't know that you've been through, and, you know, good stuff, right? And cause I don't want to leave the impression that it was bad. It wasn't bad. It was a struggle to get to where, you know, and then all of a sudden, boom, when you least expect it, right? God goes, all right, boy, here you go. You wanted this, you know, that kind of thing. All right. Hey, first, the attitude of gratitude. So we want to say, thank you guys. We're not going to go over the stats or anything. And the countries have not changed, basically. I think we got one new country, Botswana. But that's it. And so we want to just thank you guys, because we have like, so many countries. I forget what the exact number of countries. I have it here somewhere, but that's not important. What's important is that we say thank you. So thank you for tuning into the podcast. I'm Junior Kekoeva Jr., aloha from Hawaii. And now we're going to get into the podcast. So, on the last podcast, we were talking about, you know, you guys have to understand that I have to, you know, condense everything, right? Because we only have an hour for the podcast, and not even an hour for the podcast. Okay, so I got to crunch, like, everything. And when I'm telling some stories, sometimes I got to take you guys to the right and tell you a little side story over here. And then I take you guys to the left and tell you a little side story over there. Okay, because it has to be entertaining. You don't want to listen to a podcast and go, oh, man, this guy just this is too much. Like, it's boring, right? Okay, small kind comedy, small kind stories. But today on the podcast, I'm going to tell you like a couple radio stories, okay, that's really funny, things that I experienced. And the first experience of a radio guy, like a famous radio, I met the most famous radio guy, okay, in Hawaii, if not one of them in the world, okay. This guy was probably the second most famous radio disc jockey in the world. Well, I can think of three right now. Okay, I'm thinking of Don Imus, okay? I'm thinking of Wolfman Jack. And in Hawaii, there was Hal Lewis, okay? And we called him Aku. Okay, I can mention these names because they're no longer with us, okay? These men have passed on. I don't know if Don Imus is still with us. I'm not sure. Please, if you're in New York and you go, hey, Don's still down the street, bro. What are you talking about? Okay. All right. Okay. Like I said, small kind of comedy. Okay. But Don Imus, and it's really cool because one of the radio names that I used, in my career is right under Don Imus on the top 40, of 40. What is it called? It's called I forgot what it's called. But it's the list of these radio personalities across America. And when you get to the, you know, that name and you go, whoa, you're right next to Don Imus. I'm like, yeah, I mean, that was just lucky. I don't know what it is. I don't know. God was being good to me that day and said, OK, boy, here you go. Right next to Don Imus. But that was really it was really cool. So so Hal Lewis, right? Hal Lewis was called J. Aku Head Pupuli. Now, you can Google this. The problem with this is that some of the things made it to the internet, and a lot of it didn't, Okay, so there's not going to be too much. But, you know, back in the day, oh, man, this guy. So this guy, and the reason why, you know, why are we talking about this on the Law of Attraction podcast? Because this guy made it, okay, lost it, made it again, lost it, and made it back again. This is his story. I mean, you know, and so he attracted money. He attracted all of these things, okay? He manifested these things. And then he lost it. He didn't care. And then boom, right back again. Okay, and this is about money sticking to you, the law of attraction part of money sticking to you. So let's forego the law of attraction explanation and get right into Hal Lewis. So my experience with Hal Lewis was like, I was a kid. Okay, I was like maybe 12, I think 11, 12. Now, right around that time in my life, I was interested in entertainment because I was watching people like Frank Sinatra on TV, right? Dean Martin, you know, all these, Tony Bennett, all these, Don Ho. Don Ho was, Don Ho wasn't on TV when I was 12. Don Ho was on TV when I was 14. Okay, and he did this TV show from Waikiki Beach. It was really, really cool. And when I saw that TV show, it was like confirmation. It was like, bro, that's what you do, right? And anyway, so we'll go back to the Hal Lewis story, okay? So there was this hotel on Kauai. I'm from the island of Kauai. So Kauai, hey, the Raposo's listening. Bro, stand up when you say that. Okay, there we go. Okay, I'm standing up. All right, the Raposo's listening. Bro, hey, aloha to the Raposo's, Uncle Kenny, and then, of course, all his nephews, and those guys are the guys that are listening. So mahalo, you guys. Love you guys. And Frankie Fernandez. I got to mention him one more time on the podcast. There you go. There you go, Frankie. Okay, so anyway, right, where I live, right down the road, at the end of the road where I live, because I live up in the back of this hotel called Coco Palms in the old days. Now, Coco Palms was made famous by Elvis Presley, who came down and filmed in the lagoon. So they had this lagoon and they had canoes. They had a torch lighting ceremony. They had all this stuff. And people from all over the world, and these are rich people because you had to be rich to stay there. I want to say, hey, not rich, but you had to at least be middle income America kind of person, right? So you had to be middle class to stay there. And so it wasn't the budget hotel, put it that way. And it was really nice. I mean, everything about this hotel was like magic. And it took you back. It took you back like to ancient Polynesia and ancient Hawaii. Like it was really, really cool in that respect. And that's why people came, because they wanted the experience, right? Like now it would be the Polynesian Cultural Center in Hawaii. And you can Google that if you're, you know, out there somewhere outside of Hawaii. Most of our audience is outside of Hawaii. It would be nice if I could get a real heavy, you know, Hawaii following. But right now it's outside of Hawaii. But anyway, so Coco Palms was like that. And so they would have this torch lighting ceremony in the evening, like right after sunset, when it was getting dark. And everything would stop and everybody would watch the torch lighters light the torches. And I mean, it was the most amazing thing. And this guy would run down the lagoon with the torches and, you know, whoo, 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 and the thing, you know, I'm making sound effects, okay, for going on circle and touching the kerosene. So they had coffee cans with kerosene inside, you know, that guy with the wicks and the torches, and they would light them, and they'd all right down the lagoon. So Elvis Presley filmed part of Blue Hawaii in there. And I don't know if that was the only movie, but they had a lot of movie stars that filmed there. There's another story that I have about Coco Palms that happened when I was 14 that we may or may not put on the podcast. It was, but that's a different movie, different story. But I was involved in a movie set in Coco Palms Hotel. Anyway, we'll leave it there for that part. It's not a podcast, Hawaiians. It's not a podcast. Okay. So anyway, so I went down there, right? And because I heard, because I was across on the beach, right? And I hung out at the beach like from, I want to say, 12 to 17, those years. And so I was so interested in entertainment. And I met so many people down there from entertainment. Bob from Sesame Street, like all these people, right? So I heard, right, that they were filming with this lady, Emma Veery, who is, still going strong as far as I know. And she was filming on this canoe, and there was a harpist, and they were filming for some kind of special that was being produced. And I don't know the details. I forgot, you know, but she was being produced by a lot of people. And of course, her husband was Aku at the time. Okay. At the time. So anyway, so I was curious, right? I'm like, oh, I got to see this. I want to see this. Right. And so I went into the hotel and I snuck in, kind of like, you know, cause we used to sneak into the pool. We used to, you know, jump in the pool, go swim in the pool. And eventually one of the bellboys would find us, right? They would be walking by the pool. Like, hey, what's that brown kid doing in there? You know, hey, that's one of the kids. And they would come in. Hey, what you doing? Get out of here. And they would take us. Sometimes they would walk us like all over just to scare us. They would walk us to the manager, like to the lobby, and threaten to take us to the manager, right? And then at the last minute, they would let us go, right? So, and these guys were not old. These guys were like 19, 20. So, you know, but we were 12, right? And so they would scare the crap out of us like that. And so, but anyway, on this day, I wasn't going pool. I just wanted to see what was going on. So I was walking down the lagoon and I go, oh, wow, there they are. And there was this camera crew, okay, and they were on a platform. And then there was another camera crew, like on the other side. And there was a camera crew in a boat, like I don't know if it was a Boston Whaler or whatever. And they were filming. They had cameras mounted, and they were following Emma, who was singing, right? And beautiful, beautiful lady. And she was singing, and she had a beautiful voice. And the harpist was sitting on the canoe. So this was a double hull canoe, and in the middle it was just plyboard platform kind of thing. And they put the thing right there. They mounted the harpist, and they put the harpist right there. And it's huge harp. It was a big symphony harpist. And then there they were filming the special. Okay. Now, I don't know if this is on YouTube or not. Maybe it made YouTube. A lot of stuff didn't make the digital era. But anyway, I'm walking down the side of the lagoon, right? Because I want to get a better, you know, I want to get a better view of all it is, right? And I'm walking down and I see this guy in a hat, and it looks like a fisherman's hat, you know, and not the kind of fisherman's hat we have now. This is a kind that kind of just droops down over your eyes so you can hardly see, like, you know, who it is. And I look at this guy and I'm like, wow, you know, looks like brother didn't shave for a couple of days or whatever, you know, and he's just sitting there, and he looks old to me. He looks old because I'm 12, right? He could have been in his 40s or 50s, well, whatever. I don't know. I don't know how old he was. But he was sitting in this beach chair on the grass on the side of the lagoon, because the whole side of the lagoon was like a lawn. It was like grass, right? Like a mound. And he's sitting right there watching the production, right? And I go down. And this was early in the morning. This is like 9 o'clock, 9:30 in the morning. And I'm walking down. And I see him, and I stop, and I look at him again, and I go, hey, wait a minute. This is Aku, right? Okay, I can tell this story because my attorney already cleared it. We talked the story about this. And I go, hey, this is Aku, right? And so I walk down, I, you know, see this guy, and I go, whoa, like, wow. As I get closer, right, he kind of swings over, looks at me, looks back at the thing, right? And he looks back at the production, and I'm watching the production, and I'm looking at him, and I'm looking at the production, and I look back at him, right? And I'm like, I want to talk to this guy. I want to meet this guy, right? I want to meet this guy. This guy, bro, this guy was huge, okay? You have no idea. Everybody listened to this guy in Hawaii, okay? And in a second, I'm going to tell you a follow-up to how powerful this radio station was at the time. So anyway, so I walk up to him. And I go, excuse me, but are you Aku? And he had this gravelly low voice. And he goes, yeah, kid. You know, he talks like, yeah, kid. You know, that kind of thing. And I said, oh, nice to meet you. And I shook his hand, right? And when he said, yeah, kid, right? And he was on vacation, right? He wasn't working. He was on vacation. When he said, yeah, kid, I was like, well, I got hit with this vapor of Smirnoff's or whatever it was. Right? I think it was vodka. So it smelled just like vodka. And the reason I know this, the reason I knew it at 12 is my grandfather used to drink vodka. Okay. And I was like, whoa, he smells just like grandpa, you know, that kind of thing. And I was like, whoa, right? Like early in the morning, right? Brother was partying, right? And I would too on vacation. I've been known to, in fact, my favorite part of the, you know, day to drink is not nighttime, it's daytime, and then I take my nap. And you know, I've been doing that for years because I used to work on radio. So I get up like super early, right? By the time I get done with radio, it was like 10 o'clock in the morning. That was like nighttime for me. And it was time to go to bed, right? So yeah, you know, a glass of wine, whatever, and then go sleep. So I totally, you know, later on in life, I totally felt this guy. And I'm like, oh, okay, all right. And he, you know, he's sitting there. And you would think that, like, he would have been wearing nice clothes. And but no, this guy was just casual. This guy was like aloha shirt and shorts. And he had these, what do you call those slip-on kind of sneakers kind of thing. And this hat, right? And nobody knew it was him. Like, he was just sitting there. I happened to go, like, close enough to go, hey, who's this guy? So I shook the hand of the most famous radio announcer that Hawaii ever had, right? And that was my experience with Aku. So so I had this experience, right? And I walked away going, wow, this guy is like, whoa. Like he was like super famous. So I watched the rest of the filming and I said goodbye to him, you know, wave goodbye. And he's like, he's like, man, leave me alone. You know, that kind of thing. And I left. And that was my experience, you know, meeting Aku. So let's go down the road a few years. There was this, okay, now I'm not going to mention names. There was this politician that was running for office, and I was 14 years old, and I wrote a jingle for her, okay? Okay, as I go up the years, always, people are alive, and I cannot mention names. All right, so anyway, but this politician, right, and I wrote a jingle for her when I was 14, and she used to come down to the beach, and she used to, you know, hang out and talk to us because she was a young activist. Where I come from, right? And she was a young activist. And I believed in activism when I was young, right? And I think a lot of us do when we're young, right? You know, we're like, yeah, save the turtles, save the lions, save the whatever, save everything, right? Save the planet. And she was all about bike lanes, and she really had a lot to do with a lot of, conservation type efforts, okay, on the island that I'm from. And then you have, you know, you have the people that want to build and develop, and then you have anti-development. She was anti-development. And when I was young, I was like, nah, no build, nothing. We're like, I'm like this, you know, and I was just a kid. I didn't know anything, right? So I wrote her a jingle. We went to the radio station. They took us to the radio station. And we recorded this, jingle that I wrote, right? And they played it all over the island of Kauai. And I was like, whoa, that was the biggest head trip for me at 14, like driving around, and my mom would be driving, of course, and she'd be driving around, and I turned on the radio, and oh, there I was, you know, singing the jingle, like, you know, and I'm like, whoa. So it was like a huge head trip for me at 14. And so I've done these key things in my life, like so many things that you look back and you go, wow, isn't it a coincidence? Like he did all of these key little things keep popping up, you know, in my life, right? But this was my focus. Now, the law of attraction says that you get what you focus on. And ever since like 11 or 12, around that area in life, in my life, I focused on entertainment. So all these things happen. So anyway, while I was at the radio station, the guy said, look, if you ever want to get into radio, and he offered me my, you know, we briefly mentioned this, but he offered me to come and do my own radio show for 1 hour, right? But this was in a place called Ele'ele on Kauai, and it's kind of far away from where I live. And my mom, you know, drove me down, I think, 2 or 3 times, and that was it. She goes, no, I have a house to clean, kiddo. And she used to call me kiddo. And so she was busy cleaning house, and you know, and I lost my radio show, basically. But this guy gave me an hour show, like a 1 hour show. And it was every Saturday. And I think it was from 1 to 2 o'clock, something like that, every Saturday. And I was 14 years old. So I was the youngest disc jockey ever on Kauai at the time, right? After that, you know, I heard high school students go on and, you know, intermediate students go on, you know, and I was like, oh, okay, they broke my record, but whatever. And, you know, but at the time, right, it was a big deal. And it was a big deal for me because, you know, I was like from an island that was like, you know, way, I don't want to say behind Oahu, but it was less westernized than Oahu. Oahu over here, like where I live now, is like a city kind of thing. Over there, it's like the whole island is country, right? So it was kind of a big deal back in the day. Certainly for me, at being that age, right? And so I did that. But he said, hey, if you ever want to, you know, do anything in radio, you got to go to Columbia School of Broadcasting because, you know, that's where we went. It's where I went. And, you know, I know the guy over there. He gave me the guy's name and everything, whatever. And it wasn't until I was 17 that I left my island. I came here and I was, you know, I went to go and apply at a carpet cleaning company. I can't say the name, but it was a carpet cleaning company and it was at the Control Data Building. That's what it was called. It's actually Kaiser Hospital now. It's a Kaiser Hospital clinic now. And I went to that building because I was looking for a job. And I was going to be a carpet cleaner. Yeah, I was going to try that. Okay, so you know on the last podcast, I was talking about security guard. So before a security guard, I was looking for a carpet cleaner, right? I was like, yes, we're going to clean carpets. We're going to do that. And then I applied for the job, right? Because my uncle was like, bro, you know, you got to do something. You got to go work. You got to find one job. So I was job hunting, right? And on the way out, I looked on the building directory to see if there's any other place I can apply, right, for anything, right? So I was, you know, I was kind of looking like, okay, what got in this building? This, okay, no, I can't do that. I don't know how to sell insurance. Okay, can't pass, you know? And I'm going down the line, and then I see, oh, I get to the C's, right? And it's Columbia School of Broadcasting. And I go, oh. And I started thinking about, and I put it together on the spot. Like, I was like, boy, if I did this, I could get into radio. You can get around music. I could do my show. You know, so my mind, my ADHD, okay, combined presentation brain, okay, because I have both types of ADHD. And I do a lot of thinking really fast sometimes, okay? And I put it all together. I'm like, oh, this is logical right here. Go radio, and then boom, 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 and then pretty soon you can do your Waikiki show, all right? Right? Wrong. Okay, that didn't happen for like years. Like, whoa, Hawaiians, the journey was so long. I went the roundabout way, but what a journey, okay? I had to go the long way around. Some people, they just go right up to the record company and knock on the door, right? And they get in. I mean, you know. But I thought, no, if I go over here, so I was planning. I was planning strategically. I laid this out. And this all happened, like, when I was right there, I got this idea that connected all these dots in my mind, at least, right? And nothing went according to the way I planned. But I went and I auditioned. They got my audition. You know, they, of course, that's what they do. They take everybody's audition. See, I didn't know that. I thought I was special, right? And I sucked at it. Oh, my God. I sucked at it. But they were telling me, oh, no, you have the right personality for this stuff. You can, you know, and I don't know. Maybe they saw something, maybe not, but... You know, I know a lot of guys that actually ended up going to the school that really did not, like, fit, okay? And I didn't know that some of the guys that I actually ended up working with in radio went. I found that out later, like, after the fact. And I go, oh, you went to Columbia? Oh, yeah, I went to Columbia. Oh, really? Like, we were, you know, alumni or whatever. It was trade school. So I went and I go, yeah. So I auditioned. The guy told me how great I was. He pumped me up, right? I was like, wow. By the time I left, like, I was on cloud nine. And so I ran down to the payphone because we didn't have cell phones in those days, right? Ran down to the payphone, put my, I don't know. I used to call collect, right? press the zero. Yeah, Ma, guess what? Ma, I can go broadcasting school. That's what I like to do. And my mom is like, are you sure you want to do this? Because, you see, my mom is like, my mom took me to karate, right? That's not a podcast, Hawaiians, but I'm going to tell you what happened with karate one day. That's a trip. But she enrolled me in that. You know, she took me to baseball. She's like, all this stuff to try, right? And I always quit, right? So my mom is like, okay, are you sure you're going to stick with this? I go, oh, yeah, Mom, I got this ready. Because I'm going to do this. Then I'm going to get into, you know, radio, right? And I'm going to get around the music people. And then they're going to discover that I can sing. I can do this. I can do that. And, you know, all cartwheels, everything. And then they're going to hire me. Then they're going to put me in a car. And they're going to make me one star. They're going to sign the contract. And then boom, right? So I had this crazy plan, right? And my mom goes, okay. So my mom wrote a check, right, to those guys. And I think the whole process took about a week. And boom, there I was in broadcasting school. And so, and bless my mom's heart. You know, my mom, I gotta say this in all fairness, okay, because I love my mom, okay. But my mom is not, and I want to make it clear that she is not down with my crazy ideas, okay? Because when I laid out the plan for her, and I said, oh, I can do this, and then that, and did that, and did, you know, she was like, oh, boy, here we go again, right? She's like that, right? Because she lived with me, right? She raised me, right? She was around all my crazy ideas, like, my whole life. I was 6 years old laying stuff out for her. Oh, Mom, I'm going to do this, and I go in high school, and, you know. Oh, man. So she was all like that, right? So she's used to me already. So she goes, okay, yeah, we'll try this, you know. And so I went to broadcasting school. Now, doing broadcasting school, I started to meet the older people in radio. And I got to say this, and this is no racial, okay? But when I got into radio, it was all guys from the mainland. These were, you know, Caucasians in a local market here in Hawaii. And so these guys were in control of the entire market. And when I say control, I don't mean like they were keeping brown people out or Hawaiians out or local people out or anything. There just weren't many local people there. There was this one guy that I knew that was part Filipino, part Hawaiian, that was, you know, we used to, on the side, call him the token local boy. And he was on a station, and I don't even want to say his name, okay? I want to keep everybody's local, all the local names out. I mentioned Aku because, you know, he's gone. He's now, you know, he's no longer with us. But so this guy was one guy that was, you know, and we all used to joke around. He's the token local, you know, guy. And then there was another guy, right? And then pretty soon, the radio market started filling up with local guys. And the thing that I like, and it's just a personal thing, it's not a, like I said, it's not a racial thing, but I'm a homie, okay? Which means I'm from Hawaii, right? This is homeboy territory over here. And now when I scan the channels in the morning, like, it's like a multicultural club, man. And I really like it. Radio has diversified. So when I turn the radio on, I hear local guys all over the place, right? It's all local boys. And there's some, of course, there's some Caucasians still in the business. And there's one guy who was part of the original Caucasian group that's still on the radio. And he's still the number one guy. And he's the new Aku. And he actually took over from Aku. And he was really nice to me. I mean, the guys in radio that were the best to me, because I know on the, you know, last podcast, I said some stuff about, yeah, these guys are still doing the same thing and, you know, blah, 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 and, you know, all of that. And those were the guys that I worked with personally, okay? But there are people that I worked with, like this guy, right, who's the very best in radio. And I worked around him. I didn't work with him. But he had me on his Saturday shows and stuff, you know, and there was this girl that worked with him. That was really, really kind to me. She was very, very kind. And she always put me on the show. And, you know, and there was a lot of people that felt sorry for me because they saw the stuff that was being done to me and, you know, slanted against me by certain people. And they were kind of key people that worked around me that kind of, you know, did what they could do to control me in the way that, okay, we're only going to let him get this far. Okay, he only can do this. And then we're going to, you know, pull him back a little bit. And that's how, you know, I learned that it wasn't just radio that happened. I thought it just happened in entertainment and radio and stuff. No. It happens all over the place, right? And I just didn't know that going up in radio. But the hard part, the challenge part I was talking about was working for $5 an hour and sticking to your dream and going, no, I'm going to do this. and this is going to work. And know it's going to work. And that will work for any industry, okay? But I want to say that the journey is going to be a little tough when you stick to your dreams, okay? But this podcast is more about what happened in radio. So here's a couple of stories that I thought was really interesting, right? So back in the day, we had this helicopter that used this guy, okay? I'm not going to say his name. He's no longer with us, but I'm not going to say his name. But he used to fly a helicopter and do traffic reports, okay? Now, I don't know. You know, I don't know the dynamics to this whole thing and whatever, the small details. But here's what ended up happening, okay? And you know, you get to the point in radio, right, where it's the same thing over and over and over. And I'm the kind of guy, right, because I'm so ADHD, right, I got to do different stuff. You know, and that's why, like I told you on the last podcast, you know, in my mind, right, like when they said, oh, you can do anything you want in life. And I'm like, oh, okay, let's do this, that, you know, because I want to do all this stuff, right? So in radio, like you do that one thing and you do it over and over and over and over and over. And then one day you retire, okay? So this guy flew a helicopter. And from what I understand, I don't know if it's true or not, He was a Vietnam pilot or something in Vietnam, like ex-military pilot. And then he came and he was doing these traffic reports, right? And he was really popular, okay? They made him like, he was the man. When I was growing up, he was already doing it. When I was in high school, he was already doing it. When I got here to get into radio, right, he was still going. And I want to say it was like, you know, it was... I was well into radio, like I want to say like 10 years when he left, maybe 10 to 15, maybe, yeah, 15 maybe. And then he left, he retired, he left radio. And they kind of phased out the helicopter and then they brought in the airplane with somebody else. Okay, so and then there was an airplane. So and you could see this airplane. If you were on the freeway in the afternoon or in the morning, you could look up in the sky and see this plane like flying right over the freeway back and forth and whatever. And the plane would go over all the major highways and it would check it out and give you the traffic report, right? And so this station was like the number one station. But this guy was a character. And you could tell because of the reports that he used to give, right? So there's these little stories that you get from other radio people when you're in radio that they will tell you about, you know, oh, you know, this happened and that happened. And, you know, so one of the stories was that towards the end of his career, I guess he was getting tired. I guess he was just not into it, you know, because there comes a time when you cannot blame somebody for doing the same thing over and over and over. Pretty soon it's like, nah, this guy, okay, he started on the sauce, okay? And I'm talking about, like, you know, carrying a little pint with you when you, yeah, you know, that kind of thing. And so what ended up happening, so his wife used to assist him, right? And she used to call in the reports and hook everything up. She used to do technical stuff and whatever. And towards the end, right, what he would do, and this is, I thought this was hilarious. He would sit on the helipad in his chopper, okay, in the official chopper. I think it was his, I'm not sure. And he would rev the engine so you could hear the engine going, right? And they would record the traffic report, okay? And he never left the ground, right? Okay. Now, here's a couple of things you need to know about Hawaii. Things are predictable in Hawaii, okay? Especially like the weather, you know, and you could give a weather forecast at any time of year, and it would be like partly cloudy with a few scattered showers, mostly in the windward and Mauka sections, highs in the upper 80s, lows in the mid 70s, trades at 15 to 25 miles per hour. That's like the weather for like the majority of the year over here. It just varies, okay? In the summer, it goes up to the 90s, right? And then in the winter, it's like upper 80s, stuff like that, right? So, and if you know this, because you do it every year, you can like give a weather report like without even going outside, right? I mean, you glance out the window and you go, okay, and you know what month it is? You can give the weather report. I mean, it's that simple. And so this guy, right, he can do traffic because that's what he does every day, right? So he's giving like these general traffic reports, okay? And he is like hitting the bottle, right? He's hitting the pint. And from what I hear from the old timers, he used to keep it in his flight jacket. So I'm not here to say that he was drinking while flying, like he was flying under the influence. I will not say that. I will not go on record as saying that. But the story I heard, okay, was not about that. It was about he got so tired of, you know, going through the whole thing that he would sit on the helipad and gun the engine. And I don't know if he was like drinking. I don't, maybe. But some people said, yeah, he was having problems with alcohol at that time. And yeah, he was doing that. Allegedly, that's what happened, okay? So allegedly, he was gunning the helicopter, right? Giving his reports without even leaving the ground, right? And the contract was huge. I mean, the contract paid him good money. I mean, he was making good money and everything. And so anyway, but that was one of the stories that I had in radio. And I thought that was hilarious. And I'm like, what? He did what? I'm like, and I go, wow, that's kind of like genius if you don't want to work, right? Like he set it up so the actual helicopter became the sound effects and his wife was recording everything. And then boom, I thought it was hilarious. But here's where I learned the power of radio. So when I was engaged to this girl, and the most beautiful Filipino girl like I ever saw. And at the time, I'm sure I've seen more beautiful girls after her, but I remember her like that. She was the most beautiful Filipino girl I ever saw. And I was engaged to her, and I was like, whoa, how did I do this, right? And so anyway, it's not about her. It's about one day we were driving on the freeway. Now, I had this muscle car for a while, and I taught her to drive in this muscle car, and it was a Trans Am. It was a 402. It was really, really fast. This thing was like, oh man, talk about a muscle car, right? So Unks was, you know, young, and I think I was 29, right? And I was like zipping on. My average speed to work in the morning was 85. I'm not kidding. I used to work, you know, kind of far away, right? And 85 to work, 85 back, 85 work, 85 back. And pretty soon, right, I started getting busted here and there, right, because of my subconscious mind, right, going, all right, we're going 85 again, it's time to go to work, okay, 85, right? And it becomes a habit, okay? Humans are creatures of habit because of your subconscious, okay? That's your life coaching part. Now, so what happened was we were driving. I ended up getting this $400 Toyota, okay? And I often talk about it, like, you know, I started my company, my voice school on the road, going door to door in a $400 Toyota. And that was the Toyota. So, and the reason for the Toyota was because, yeah, it got very expensive to pay all the traffic fines, and I almost lost my license. And then something went wrong with the car. I think it was the power steering unit. And it was going to be real pricey, and it was going to put me out for a while. So I said, you know what, just junk the car. And I don't know why I did that. But I said, yeah, just junk the car. Because all of this stuff, you know, the pressure of losing your license and all that stuff was like on my mind. And, you know, and then I was in my late 20s, right? And I was like, okay, just junk it. And so I junked my car. I just junked it. And this lady that was at this radio station that I was working at, it was a Filipino radio station, she had a car for sale. She was selling her old car. It was $400. And we named the car after her. So, you know, I'm not going to say her name, but we named the car after her. And this $400 Toyota was a blessing to me. It allowed me to save my license. Top speed was 50 on the freeway. Okay, 50, top speed. Like, you were floorboarding the thing like, to the max. Like, it was like 50. That's all you could go. And that really, that saved my license, like, saved everything. Okay, so now here we are on the freeway in this $400 Toyota, which only had AM radio. So I'm listening to the AM version of this station that was the number one station in town, okay? And this is the power of radio, okay? That I saw it from my own eyes, right? Now, they had this new guy who took over for the guy who was gunning the helicopter, okay? And this guy was in a Cessna. It was a small plane. And they were doing traffic reports. And he was a very well-known guy over here in Hawaii. And so they would fly back, and you could see, you look up and you see the plane over the freeway. And so one day, we're driving down the freeway, and there's an ambulance coming up, you know, from the back, and I couldn't even see it, right? But we're listening to this guy. We're listening to that radio station. It's the only station we could, you know, one of the only AM stations that was worth listening to, right? And so we have it on that station, and we're cruising, and we're, you know, on the way home on the freeway. And the freeway is busy, and this is rush hour. This is afternoon drive, okay, what they call afternoon drive in radio. And so this was like, you know, yeah, that kind of time. It was crowded, and the freeway is packed, right? So we're listening to this guy, and he comes on with a bulletin, right? And he goes, well, we have the ambulance coming down the freeway, so if you people would just pull off to the right. Okay, now this is the power of radio, right? And how many listeners they had. And the entire freeway, with the exception of maybe a handful of cars, maybe 8 to 10 cars, the entire, so their ratings were number one in the market, okay, in Hawaii. And I saw, like, it was like Moses parting the Red Sea, you know, when you see the movie, it was like that. And this wave of cars, like all in front of me, starts all moving to the right. And all he said was, so if you guys could move to the right, right? And he knew how many people were listening, right? They know. And everybody kind of go, and I look in my rearview mirror, and I'm going, son of a gun, here comes the ambulance. And the ambulance was coming up way in the back, right? And everybody had cleared the path already, okay? Now, this stuff doesn't exist in today's world. But that was the power of radio. And radio was powerful. We had an expression in radio. And the expression was, when you hear about it, it's news. When you read about it, it's history. So radio always, you know, competed with the newspapers, right? And with radio, you got the news right away. Now, the new radio is social media, right? And you get the news right away. Like, we get videos out of, you know, out of the Middle East, wherever it is, and we get things like right away, and you see it right away. So a lot of times, okay, and this is another, we're going to drift back into the life coaching pot right here, Hawaiians, okay? So a lot of times you think that things are like so bad, you think that things are so like, you know, I want to say, you know, when you think you're having a bad day, because you think the whole world is going to hell, you think the whole world is bad. No. You're just getting a lot of that information simultaneously, and you're getting a lot of bad information. Now, there's also people from other countries, you know, putting misinformation on social media every day, all day, and you have to really sift through the stuff. And one day, I'm gonna address that, and we're gonna have a podcast about that. But that was the power of radio, and the power of radio was that if you were the number one station, you had power, advertising power, communications power. In that instance, you know, it was good for like getting the ambulance through and probably saving somebody's life, or at least really helping out with somebody's life, that kind of thing. And that was the power of radio. So those are some interesting stories that I had from radio. And then there was television. So that's another podcast. But on another podcast, I will tell you the story about the time I, you know, found out, right, live in real time, that wrestling was scripted, professional wrestling. Because at one time I was like, yeah, maybe we can do that on the next podcast. I don't know. I gotta ask Jay, because he's over there looking at me like, what? Because no, we didn't plan that. Okay, we didn't plan this. Okay, but anyway, but yeah, he's looking at me like, you're gonna do what? I'm like, yeah. So here, long story short, And I'm not going to tell the whole story. We're going to save it for another podcast. But here's the teaser. Okay, so that's what they do on radio. They tease you. Like, oh, coming up on the news, coming up next, we're going to talk about da-da-da. And then they play the commercial, so you listen to the commercial. Okay, no commercials, Hawaiian. No worries. Okay, but the commercials at the very end, so you can just switch them off. If you want to. That, don't tell my sponsors I said that. But anyway, so at one point, I became the lead commentator for this professional wrestling thing. And if I can say this much, I can say that I worked for The Rock's grandmother. That's all I'm going to say. But I worked for her. She took real good care of me. Like, she was so good to me. And but the thing about it was that there was a thing. Okay, I can do this in like 2 minutes, right? Real fast. Let me tell a story. Here we go. Boom, Hawaiians. Radio. Okay, so there was this guy. I can't tell you the name of the local guy, but there was this Samoan local guy who was really, really popular. Okay. And there's babyface and heel. Babyface is the good guys, heels are the bad guys, and they have roles to play. And I didn't know this. I didn't know this up until this night. And what happened this night was they had a match where you would climb the pole to get the check. And it was like, I don't know, $50,000 check, $100,000, I don't know, whatever it was. And this other guy was the infamous Sheik, like the real infamous Sheik from the mainland. And I used to see him in wrestling magazines when I was a kid. I was like a fanatic. I was a fan, you know, fanatic. Yeah, I was a fan. And I used to buy the wrestling magazines when I was like, you know, I don't know, 9, 10, 11, 12. Like, you know, that was something that we did when we were kids. We used to buy wrestling magazines or magazines for whatever we were interested in. It was the old days. And so so I get this. I see this Sheik, right? And I go, whoa. Like, this is surreal for me because I'm working with the Sheik. I'm like, whoa, I'm doing this match and this is the Sheik. And now this is manifestation, I'm telling you, right? Because I used to be a big fan of this guy's, right? I used to go, wow. And he was very intriguing. He looked the part, you know. He used to wear the Saudi Arabian headdress. I don't know what it's called. I'm sorry for you people in United Arab Emirates because you guys listen to us. I'm sorry, I don't know. But this guy, he was awesome and spooky looking, right? And so he's climbing. So he's climbing up the pole. And the local hero guy, the babyface guy, is climbing up after him. I'm calling the action, and I have a pair of headsets. And way out in the back of the auditorium, there's a production van. And our boss, our director, his name was Charlie. I can say that much. I can say first name. And so he was the director. And he would tell me what to, you know, okay, we're going to commercial next, you know, whatever. He'd give me the instructions. I'm ad-libbing, and I'm going, and there's the Sheik, and he's climbing the pole, and I'm calling the action, and the crowd is going wild. And we've got like a really full house, right? And they're screaming and yelling. We got these old ladies ringside. They're like, you know, these old grandmas, and they're standing up, and they're swearing at this guy. You know, and he's climbing the pole, and in my headset, I hear, watch out for the fire, watch out for the fire. And I'm like, what? And I look up because they were directly over me. And I see the Sheik, right, throw fire. And what it was he had some kind of chemicals. I still don't know how he did it. He had some kind of chemicals in his hand. And he had like a Bic lighter kind of thing, like a small little lighter. And he would ignite these chemicals. And it would look like he threw fire. And he would just throw it down like this, right? And in the old days, here's another side thing to the old days. They used to use razor blades, and they used to cut each other in the forehead. I mean, this is real, Hawaiians. This is, I mean, I know you younger guys are like, what? Like, what, unks? No, they used to do that. And so when you see these old wrestling pictures, look at their foreheads. They're all cut up. They all have scars on the forehead. Okay, so this is the thing. There's no main arteries or anything in the forehead. So that's partially why. But anyway, but I long story, Hawaiians. And that's not a podcast. I don't even know if we're going to do a podcast on that. But that's a story. And then at that moment, right, when that happened, like, I was like, my heart sank to the floor. I was like, oh no, it's fake. I'm like, oh geez. So my heart just sank to the floor because I had been a fan like my whole life. I've been a wrestling fan my whole life. And then now, here I was, right? I got to actually be the commentator. And I was like, what? Like, I couldn't believe I was doing it, first of all. Secondly, I was like, oh, wrestling is fake, right? That feeling. And I was looking up like that. And I remember it was like a slow motion moment. That you know, trauma is an emotional event, right? That you can't, you know, that sticks out in your mind. Okay. So I guess I was traumatized, but I can still see it in my mind. I can still see it. I was 26 years old. So I was young. I was 26. And I still see it fresh in my head. The moment that I found out that wrestling was fake. And my heart sank to my toes, and I wasn't afraid of the fire. I wasn't afraid of anything. I was afraid of wow, this new knowledge that I was a part of a show. And I was like, what? This is a show? And yeah. And I was let out of ways. I was like, oh man. And you know, I was pretty upset for like a couple of weeks. I was upset for a couple of weeks, because I was like, oh man, you mean the whole time I was buying magazines when I was a kid, you mean the whole time that I followed these guys? And so in the old days, that's how people had followers, right? Magazines. Now you guys follow on Instagram, Facebook, whatever. And I go, you mean to tell me I've been a loyal follower all these years, and all of a sudden sorry, Hawaiians, I gotta go. But yeah. Oh man, Hawaiians. But yeah, I did some crazy stuff in my life. But yeah, that was one. I was like, what? Wrestling is fake? Hey, want to thank our sponsors, Brother Randy over there at Island Club and Spa in Kaka'ako, beautiful downtown Kaka'ako. And we also want to thank Voice Master Enterprises, family of service companies, along with AFM Hawaii Music, the home of Darren Chinen and his music. Okay, go check him out. Okay, just go to the website. It's afmhawaiimusic.com. Check him out. Till next time, I'm Junior Saint. Hey, mahalo and aloha.